closer to put my arms about him. Maybe, after all, Papa was going to try to let me be happy. "I'm sorry for all the ugly things I said after Mama died, Papa. I don't hate you or blame you for her death. If only you'd bring Sylvia home, I'd feel she didn't die for nothing. Please bring Sylvia home soon."
"My darling,"
he said, looking far away.
"I will. As soon as the doctors give the word, you'll have your baby sister."
I told myself that night that perhaps God did know what he was doing when he took away mothers and gave fathers a new daughter. Perhaps he had a good reason for doing what he did. Even if it did rob me of a mother I desperately needed, Sylvia wouldn't miss her because she'd have me and wouldn't know any better. It was midsummer before the music teacher Arden knew came back from a long stay in New York City. Finally, one wonderful day, Arden put me on the handlebars of his bike and rode me into Whitefern Village to meet Lamar Rensdale. He was tall and very thin, with a high, broad brow and wild, curly, chocolate-brown hair. His eye color matched his hair color exactly. He looked me up and down approvingly, smiled, and then led me to his piano and asked me to demonstrate what I already knew.
"Just fool around like you said you've been doing,"
he said, standing behind my shoulder as Arden sat down to smile encouragingly.
"Not as bad as you told me,"
said Mr. Rensdale.
"Your hands are small, but you can scale an octave. Did your mother play exceptionally well?"
That's the way it began. Of course, Papa knew that it was Arden who rode me to and from the village, but he didn't object.
"But don't you play with him in the woods. You stay in view of his mother at all times. You are never to be alone with him. Never. You hear?"
"Now listen here, Papa," I began, facing him squarely and struggling not to sound weak. "Arden is not the trashy, low-class kind of boy you think he is. We don't meet in the woods, but on the rim. His mother sits in the window and talks to us. We're seldom out of her sight. And she's so beautiful, Papa. Really, she is. Her hair is dark like yours, and her eyes are like Elizabeth Taylor's. Only Billy's eyes are even prettier. And you've always said no one had eyes prettier than Elizabeth Taylor's."
"Isn't that nice?"
he said cynically, as if he didn't believe any neighborhood woman could be as beautiful as a movie star.
"Nobody is as beautiful as Elizabeth Taylor, but Elizabeth Taylor. People are individuals, Adrina. Unique, each one of us. A miracle, each one of us. Never to be duplicated. Though this old world of ours may spin around another 5 to 10 billion years.
There will never be another Elizabeth Taylor, another Lucetta Lana Whitefern Adair, another you, or another me.
That's exactly why you are so special to me. If ever I am lucky enough to meet a woman as beautiful as your mother, and as warm and loving, then I will fall down on my knees and thank God. I may never find another like her, and I'm lonely, Adrina. So lonely."
He was lonely. It showed in his shadowed eyes, in his loss of appetite. "Papa, Billy is really beautiful. I haven't exaggerated."
"I don't care what she looks like,"
he said despondently.
"I'm through with wives and married life. I'm devoting all my energies to taking care of you."
Oh, I didn't want him to devote all his energies to taking care of me. That meant he'd never give me any freedom. And that meant he'd spend all his time trying to turn me into the first and best Adrina. And if he really believed there was only one of each person, why did he always want me to become her? I stood before him, his hands still on my waist, and I couldn't speak up and say more. I could only nod and feel confusion whirling like a maelstrom in my brain. Since Arden rode off every day to the village, I was allowed 5 weekday lessons, which made me think I'd soon make up for lost time. For 1 solid hour, I stayed with Lamar Rensdale and really tried to retain all he taught. According to Mr. Rensdale, I was an exceptional student with great natural ability. I wanted to believe he was telling the truth, not just flattering me just to keep me coming back and paying his fees. Arden would hurry back from delivering his evening newspapers to pick me up when my lessons were over. Late one night, 8 months after Mama's death, I stole downstairs and again practiced on Mama's grand piano. Its tone was so wonderful, so true, much better than the cheap piano my teacher used. Before my music lessons, I hadn't even noticed it had a tone. As I sat there in the dead of night playing my simple little piece, I closed my eyes and pretended I was Mama, and my fingers were as skilled as hers were, and I could pour into them all the nuances that she had. But it didn't sound wonderful. My music didn't send chills down my spine as hers had. Discouraged, I opened my eyes and decided I'd better keep a close eye on the music and not try to improvise. That's when I heard a small sound behind me. I whirled to confront Vera standing in the doorway. She smiled at me archly, making me squirm.
"You sure are wrapped up in music all of a sudden," she said. "What's he like, your Mr. Rensdale?"
"He's nice."
"I don't mean that, stupid. I heard the girls at my school say he's very young, handsome, and sexy. And a bachelor."
Uneasily, I fidgeted. "I guess he is all of that, but he's too old for you, Vera. He wouldn't look at a kid like you."
"Nobody is too old for me, but everybody will be too old for you, sweet Adrina. By the time you escape Papa, you'll be creaky in the joints and wearing glasses to match your gray hair."
The worst of this was I knew every word she said was true. Papa was latching on to me more and more with each passing day. In all ways but bedroom ones, he was making me his wife. In fact, I listened to his stock market talk with far more tolerance and understanding than Mama ever had, and my aunt had no patience with that sort of boring talk.
"I'm going to make Papa give me music lessons, too," stated Vera, glaring at me hard, and I knew she'd give me hell if she didn't have her way.
The very next morning, Vera was dressed in her most becoming clothes. Her strange, bright orange hair somehow flattered her very pale face, and her dark eyes were truly shocking.
"You do everything for Adrina and nothing at all for me," she said to Papa. "And it's my mother who cooks your meals and cleans your house and washes and irons, and you don't pay her anything.
I want to study music, too. I'm every bit as sensitive and talented as Adrina." He stared at her pale face until she flushed and turned half sideways, as she always did when she had something to conceal.
"I need some beauty in my life, too,"
she said plaintively, casting down her dark eyes and tugging on a length of her apricot hair.
"Once a week for you," he said grimly. "You go to school and have lessons to learn. Adrina can have one class a day to keep her idle mind out of trouble."
I thought surely Vera would object to this unbalanced arrangement, but oddly enough, she seemed satisfied. I took Vera with me on Friday to introduce her to Mr. Rensdale.
"Why, beauty must truly run in the Whitefern family, just as everyone in the village says,"
he said as he held out his hand and smiled.
"I don't think I've ever met two prettier sisters."
It seemed to me Vera's fingers gripped his hand so that even when he wanted to stop shaking hands, she wouldn't let go.
"Oh, I'm not nearly as pretty as Adrina," said Vera in a shy, small voice,
fluttering her mascaraed eyelashes.
"I only hope I'm half as talented."
I had to stare, really stare. This girl talking to Mr. Rensdale wasn't the Vera I knew. He liked her, I could tell that, and he was grateful for another student, especially one who flattered him and couldn't stop staring at him. Whenever she could, she was picking lint from his suit or brushing back that lock of hair that kept falling on his forehead. On the way home, she confided all she knew about him from her school friends.
"He's very poor, a struggling artist, as they say. I've heard he composes music in his spare time and hopes to sell his songs to some Broadway producer."
"I hope he does."
"You don't hope it nearly as much as I do," she said fervently.
The months passed so swiftly by without Sylvia coming home that I grew more and more apprehensive about my unseen little sister. I knew my father had taken my aunt to visit her several times, so she truly did exist, but not once did Papa allow me to go with him. He took me to the movies, to the zoo, and of course to the first Adrina's grave, but Sylvia was still out of bounds. Papa refused to bring Sylvia home, no matter how much I pleaded. It was over a year now since my mother had died and Sylvia had been born. Surely she's weighing over 5 pounds by this time.
"Yes, she weighs a bit more each time I see her."
He said that reluctantly, as if he wished she didn't. "Papa, she's not blind, without arms or legs. Everything is there, isn't it?"
"Yes,"
he said in a heavy voice.
She's got the right parts where they should be, and all four limbs, same female equipment you have. But she's still not strong enough.
Papa explained for the zillionth time.
She's not exactly normal, Adrina, but don't ask for more details until I'm ready to give them.
My thoughts about Sylvia kept me from feeling good. I longed for her as I dusted and pushed the vacuum. Vera couldn't vacuum because it made her short leg ache. She couldn't dust because she had little control of her hands, and she dropped what she picked up. That also excused her from setting or clearing the table. I did every one of her chores. I even made all the beds, which was the one duty my aunt insisted Vera do. Perhaps because she was grateful, Vera seemed to like me more. Trustingly, I tried to treat her as a friend. How's your music proceeding? I never hear you practicing like I do.
That's because I practice at Lamar's, she said with a small, insinuating smile. I told him you wouldn't let me use your mother's piano, and he believed me.
She giggled as I frowned and started to speak.
He's so handsome, he sends chills over me.
I guess he is, if you like his type.
Not your type, huh? I think he's exceptionally handsome.
He's told me all about himself, too. I'll bet he didn't tell you anything. He's 25 years old and graduated from the Juilliard School of Music. Right now, he's composing a musical score for some play he's writing, too. He's sure he'll sell it to a producer he met when he lived in New York. She pressed forward to whisper, I'm hoping and praying he does sell his musical, and he'll take me with him. Oh, Vera, Papa would never let you go with him. You're too young.
It's none of Papa's damn business what I do, is it? He's not my father, and he doesn't own me like he owns you. And don't you dare tell him I've got designs on Lamar Rensdale. We're just as good as sisters. Aren't we?
I needed her friendship, and gladly promised not to tell Papa anything. Wishes Come True. It was spring again. Mama had been dead for more than a year and a half. She was gone, but far from forgotten. I pored over her gardening books and taught myself to care for her roses. Each rose petal reminded me of Mama with her creamy skin, her glorious hair, her rosy cheeks. In the backyard, my Aunt Elspeth tended the onions, the cabbages, radishes, cucumbers, and everything else she grew to eat. Things that grew and couldn't be eaten were valueless to my aunt. Vera was sometimes hateful to me, sometimes nice to me. I didn't trust her, even when I wanted to. Now that Vera had claimed the rocking chair, I avoided it as I had before, though Papa believed I still rocked in it, believed sooner or later the gift it had would be mine.
How old did you say you were?
Asked Mr. Rensdale one day after he'd explained again how I had to feel the music as well as learn to strike the right keys. For some odd reason, tears began to streak my face when long ago I'd learned to accept my unique plight. I don't know, I wailed. No one tells me the truth. I've got a smeary memory full of half-seen images that whisper I might have gone to school, yet my father and my aunt say I never have. Sometimes I think I'm crazy, and that's why they don't send me to school now. He had a graceful way of rising, like a ribbon unfolding. Slowly he came to stand behind me. His hands, much smaller than my papa's, caressed my hair and then my back.
Go on. Don't stop. I'd like to hear more of what goes on in your house. You confound me in so many ways, Adrina. You are so young and so old. I look at you sometimes and see someone haunted. I'd like to take away that look. Let me help.
Just the tender way he spoke made me trust him, and out it all came, like a river bursting through the dam. All that confounded me came gushing out breathlessly, including Papa's insistence that I sit in that rocking chair and catch the gift that had once belonged to my dead sister. I hate having her name. Why didn't they give me my own name? He made some compassionate sound.
Adrina is a beautiful name, and so right for you. Don't blame your parents for trying to hold on to what must have been an exceptional girl. Accept the fact that you too are exceptional, and maybe even more so.
But I thought I heard something in his voice that said he knew more about me than I knew about me, and he pitied me, and wanted most of all to shield me from whatever it was I wasn't supposed to know. and it was that one thing I didn't know that I had to know. Then, before I knew what to expect, he had his fingers under my chin and was looking deep into my eyes. It was strange to be so close to an adult man who wasn't my father. I pulled away from him, a mixture of emotions stirring me into panic. I liked him, and yet I didn't want him to look at me in the way he was looking. I remembered Papa's warning about being alone with boys and men, as flashing visions of the rainy day in the woods dazzled my eyes, making him seem a smeary vision of the past, too.
"What's wrong, Adrina?"
he asked.
"I didn't mean to frighten you. I just wanted to reassure you. You're not crazy. You're quite wonderful in your own special way. There's passion in your music and in your eyes, too, when you lower your guard. Nature is going to wake you up one day, Adrina. Then the sleeping beauty inside you will come into her own. Don't smother her, Adrina. Let her come out. Give her a chance to set you free, and your dead sister will haunt you no more."
Filling with hope, I stared at him pleadingly, unable to voice my needs. Still, he understood.
"Adrina, if you want to go to school, I'll find a way to see that you go. It's against the state law to keep an underage child home unless that child is mentally or physically unable to attend. I'll talk to your father or your aunt, and you'll go to school. I promise."
I believed him. It was in his chocolate brown eyes. He meant what he said. I know my eyes lit up with gratitude for Lamar Rensdale, who swore the very next day he'd visit my aunt. I warned him my father wasn't likely to listen to him. Arden, Vera, and I swam in the river that summer, fished, and learned how to sail the small boat Papa had bought. Each month saw Papa just a little richer. Now he was making plans to fix up the house and restore it to its former grandeur. He talked so much about it without doing anything that I feared he never would. Anyway, it didn't matter now, for Mama was dead. My aunt was not as grouchy as she had been. In fact, I often saw her looking rather happy. Papa no longer made sarcastic, cruel remarks about her long face and her skinny figure. He even complimented her new hairstyle and the makeup she'd begun to wear. Papa still wouldn't tell me why he couldn't bring Sylvia home. I saved money from the allowance he gave me to buy Sylvia rattles and teething rings, but he never brought her home. Now she was too old for those things. He told me the hospital wouldn't let her have her own toys. I still didn't understand what was wrong with Sylvia. Day by day, Arden was growing taller. He was 15 now, but seemed much older. He was beginning to plan for his future.
"Now, please don't think this silly,"
he began in a tentative way.
"But ever since I was a kid, I've wanted to be an architect. At night, I dream of the cities I'll build, functional and beautiful, too. I want to plan the landscaping, have trees in the middle of town. I'd make the highways multi-level so they won't take up so much ground space."
He smiled at me.
"Adrina, just you wait and see the kind of cities I build."
I wanted for Arden what he wanted for himself, and many times I'd wondered why he bothered with me when so many older girls must have attracted his eyes. Why did he give me the feeling sometimes he was duty-bound to me and no other? Arden had up days and a few down days. He liked being outdoors more than he liked being in, and I told myself time and again that's why we never went into his house. And Billy must be just the opposite, for she never came outside. In all the time I'd known Billy and Arden, not once had she invited me into their home. Of course, I couldn't invite Arden into my home either because of Papa, and maybe they were just retaliating. Vera often teased and said Billy didn't think I was good enough for her son, and not good enough for her house either. At the edge of the woods, Arden and I paused to say goodbye. As the sun sank low over the horizon, white fern loomed up dark and lonely against a sky that was purple and shot through with crimson and orange. "What kind of sky is that?" I asked in a small whisper, holding tighter to his hand.
"A sailor sky,"
he said in a low voice,
"signaling a better day tomorrow."
How like Arden to say that, even if it wasn't so. I looked from the house to the drive, and then I stared off in the direction of the family cemetery. I had to clear my throat before I could ask, "Arden, just how long have you known me?" Why did he let go of my hand, blush, and turn away? Was that such an awful question? Was I convincing him with such a question that I was truly crazy?
Adrina,
he said at long last, in the tightest of all possible voices.
I met you first when you said you were 7.
That wasn't the answer I wanted.
Hey, stop frowning. Run on home so I can see you enter safely before I go.
From the doorway, I looked back to see him waiting there. I waved, then waited for him to wave back. Reluctantly, I entered the gloominess of White Fern. Time had slowed down, and August really dragged. The sultry, sticky days made me wish for a vacation where it was cool, but we never went anywhere. Inside the house, the high ceilings made it cooler than outside, but the dimness of the rooms made the stained-glass colors too brilliant, and the colors still tinkled the wind chimes that still tried to whisper secrets. Papa, I said in September when Vera was going back to school, is Vera 3 years or 4 years older than me?
She's 3, almost 4 years older,
he said without thought, then gave me a strange look.
What age does she tell you she is?
It doesn't matter what she tells me, for she lies all the time, but she tells Arden she's older.
Vera is 14,
said Papa indifferently.
Her birthday is November the 12th.
I marked that down as possibly true, knowing that birthdays in our house just didn't happen normally. Knowing, too, that first Adrina's never-never party had spoiled all birthdays for everyone. I did remember my 11th birthday, for Arden gave me that piece of pink quartz he had made into a rose. It hung around my neck on a slender gold chain and made me feel very special. No one at my house gave me anything for my birthday, or even wished me a happy birthday. I was still using my string tied to the ring trick and giving Papa my lists. Sometimes I found those lists in his office wastebasket, and sometimes I saw him stare at those lists for long, long moments, as if memorizing every stock I listed before he threw the list away. In November, I caught him doing this. You wanted me to do something to help you, and when I do, you pretend I don't. Papa, why do you go to such trouble to convince me I'm special, then toss away my lists as if you don't believe I am?
Because I'm a fool, Adrina. I want to gain by my own abilities, not by yours. And I've seen you perform your silly little trick by swinging the ring over the stocks. I want honest dreams, not contrived ones. I know when you're honest and when you're not. I'm going to make you what you should be if it takes me the rest of my life, and yours.
Chilled, I froze in position, frightened by his determined tone. What is it you want me to be?
Like my first Adrina,
he said resolutely. Even colder, I backed away. Maybe he was the crazy one and not me. His dark, brooding eyes followed my every motion, as if commanding me to run to him now and love him as she'd loved him. And I couldn't do what he wanted. I didn't want to be her. I only wanted to be me. I wandered into the front salon and found Vera sprawled again on Mama's purple chaise. Lately, she had taken to lying around all the time on Mama's favorite chaise, reading those paperback romances Mama had adored. She said they were teaching her about life and loving, and it seemed they were, for certainly something besides medical books was putting sophistication in Vera's dark eyes, making them even harder and more brittle. Time and again she had told me that she was going to make herself so beautiful and charming that no man would notice her left leg was 1 inch shorter than her right. Vera, I asked, why don't you have your shorter leg put in traction like your doctor advised? He said it would stretch out and be even with the other. But it would hurt. You know I can't stand pain, and I hate hospitals. A fine nurse she was going to make. Wouldn't the pain be worth the reward? She seemed to look inward and weigh the cure against the outcome.
I used to think so.
Then, after more consideration, she said,
now I've changed my mind. If I walked normally, then my mother would make me a slave as she makes you one. Now I can live a life of luxury like your mother did while my mother slaved until she dropped exhausted into bed.
Meanly, she grinned.
I'm not stupid, idiot, or vacant-headed. I'm thinking all the time, and my game leg is going to stand me in better stead than both your normal ones.
There was no reasoning with Vera. It had to be her way or no way. Vera didn't want to do anything. When it suited her purpose, and often it did, She'd torment me with saying my mother had faked her incessant fatigue just to gain Papa's sympathy and her sister's free housemaid services. As I ran the next afternoon to visit Arden, the wind blew leaves and scuttled them everywhere. Geese overhead were flying southward. Soon the snow would be falling. We were both bundled to our ears in heavy coats. Our breath came in small puffs of steam. What were we doing walking in the woods in freezing weather like this? Why couldn't we go into each other's houses like most people? I sighed as I stared at him, then lowered my eyes. Arden, you know why I can't invite you inside White Fern, but I don't understand why Billy doesn't invite me inside your home. Does she think I'm not good enough for an indoor relationship?
I know what you're thinking, and I understand.
He hung his head, looking more and more embarrassed.
You see, she's fixing up everything. Both of us are painting and wallpapering. She's sewing new slipcovers, making bedspreads, curtains. She's been working on our place ever since the day we moved in, but because she has to stop and sew for other people, ours gets done last. Our house isn't fine inside. Not yet. One day soon, very soon, it will be finished, and then you can come in and sit down and have a nice visit.
Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's came and went, and still, Arden and Billy didn't think their home fine enough to invite me in. Workmen came to our house in droves to paint, wallpaper, remove old finishes, put on new stain, polish and redo the whole house. We had many, many rooms. The cottage had only five. Arden, I finally asked one day, why is it taking the two of you so long to fix up your house? I don't care if it's pretty or not. He had a habit of holding my hand and comparing it to his own hand size, just as a way to keep from meeting my eyes. His fingers were twice as long. Although it was a sweet sensation, I wanted him to meet my eyes and speak honestly, yet he was evasive.
I have a father somewhere. He left when...
He stumbled, stammered, blushed, shuffled his feet, and looked panic-stricken.
It's Mom.
She doesn't really like me.
Of course she likes you.
He tugged me forward as if he were going to drag me into his home whether or not his mother approved.
It's not easy to talk about, Adrina, especially when she's asked me not to tell you anything. I said from the beginning we should be honest, and that would have saved us both a lot of embarrassment, but she wouldn't listen. I've seen you look at her, at me, and wonder what the heck was going on. I know your father doesn't want me in your life, so I don't question why I'm not invited inside White Fern. Let's get it over with. It's time you knew.
It seemed all my life had been spent inside one house. I'd never been in another house, one without ghosts from the past. The cottage's small rooms couldn't be dim and frightening like our giant rooms, nor could they be full of faded splendor and decaying antiques. I was going to see, for the first time in my life, a small house, a cozy house, a normal house. We reached the cottage where smoke, limp as chiffon scarfs, drifted heavenward. Seagulls were flying and sounding off, making the day seem very bleak. I came to an abrupt stop when Arden was about to pull me through the door. Before we go in, answer one question. Just how long have we known each other? I've asked before, and you didn't give me a straight answer. This time, I want the honest answer. Such a simple question to make him shift his eyes away.
When I think backward, I can't remember when I didn't know you. Maybe I dreamed of you even before I met you. When I saw you in the woods hiding behind the bushes and tree, it was like a dream coming true. That's the day I first knew you in reality. But I was born knowing you.
His words spread a magic shawl of comfort about my shoulders. As with eyes locked and hands clasping, he opened the cottage door and stood back to let me enter first. This time I hadn't seen Billy at the window, nor did I see her in the room I entered. Arden whispered,
I think my mom planned to postpone this day forever, so trust me as I trust you. Everything will work out fine.
That's all he said to prepare me. Many times I wondered afterwards why he didn't say much, much more. Billy. Arden slammed the door behind us, loud, very loud, a warning signal to her. A few dead leaves had blown in with us. Quickly, I went to pick them up. When I had them in my hand, I straightened to quickly glance around with a great deal of curiosity. The living room was very pretty, with bright chintzy fabrics covering the sofa and two comfortable-looking chairs. Compared to our huge rooms, it did look very small. The ceilings were hardly 8 feet above the floor, giving me a claustrophobic feeling. Still, the room had a cozy charm our kind of rooms would never have, no matter how much money was spent to rejuvenate its lost splendor, or how many sofas and chairs were covered by chintz. There were no shadows here, only clear winter sunlight that poured in brilliantly. There were no stained glass windows to dazzle my eyes and enchant me with unwanted spells.
"Mom,"
called Arden.
"I've got Adrina with me. Come on out. You can't keep your secret forever."
I spun around to stare at him, the dead leaves forgotten in my hand. Secrets. Secrets. Everyone seemed to have secrets. I saw his anxiety, the nervous hands that he stuffed in his pockets as he looked back at me in apprehension. From the look in his eyes, I knew that soon I would have to pass a test. "God," I prayed, "let me do this right, whatever it was."
"I'll be right out,"
called Billy from another room. She sounded as anxious as her son looked. Her usually warm voice had lost its welcoming tone. Now I felt uncomfortable and ready to turn and leave. Still I hesitated, seeing Arden narrow his eyes as he watched me closely. No, I wasn't going to run this time. I was going to stay and find out at least one secret. Nervously, Arden glanced toward what I presumed was Billy's bedroom door. He didn't ask me to sit down. Perhaps he even forgot I wore a heavy winter coat with a hood, for he didn't ask me to take off my coat. He was much too distracted by that closed door he kept watching. I shook off the hood but kept the coat on as I waited and waited and waited some more. Arden hadn't removed his coat either, as if he expected we wouldn't stay long. Then, as he bowed his head and stared at his shoes, I noticed for the first time a wooden wall shelf that held dozens of gold medals with dates and names. Irresistibly drawn, I stepped closer. Oh, good golly day! Delighted, I whirled around to flash a happy smile at Arden. "Arden, Billy used to be an ice skating champion? How wonderful! Look at all these Olympic awards! How could you keep something so fantastic a secret for so long? Just wait until Papa hears about this!" Now what had I said wrong? He seemed even more embarrassed. Why, this was almost as good as Billy being Elizabeth Taylor. I could envision Billy gracefully skimming over the ice, wearing some skimpy little costume that glittered. She'd whirl and spin and do those things called double axels and never become dizzy. And in all the time I'd known her and Arden, they'd never boasted, never even hinted. She'd talk to me as if she was nobody special, and she was. A small noise distracted me. I whirled around to see Billy, who must have waited until my back was turned, then swiftly hurried to sit in a chair. I stared. Why was she wearing such a full, long skirt in the middle of the afternoon? The gown she wore looked very expensive, as if she were going to attend some gala formal affair. Her marvelous jet-black hair was piled high on her head in a mass of ringlets instead of just hanging loose down her back, and that alone made her look different. Her face was heavily painted, even garishly so. Her lashes were longer and thicker than I'd noticed before, and she must have put on every last piece of jewelry she owned. I smiled weakly, not knowing how to handle a situation like this. Without all that stage makeup, she was stunningly beautiful. The fancy taffeta dress and heavy costume jewelry made her seem cheap, a fraud, someone I didn't even know. And worse, someone I didn't think I'd want to know.
"Mom,"
said Arden, a struggling smile trying to survive on his lips.
"You didn't need to go to so much trouble."
"No, Billy, you didn't. I liked you the way you looked before much better."
"Yes, I did. And Arden, you should have warned me. You know that."
I looked from one to the other, guessing something was dreadfully wrong. The vibrations between mother and son were so strong I quivered, sensing their anxieties because I was inside their house, where she didn't want me. Yet Arden was gazing at me with so much appeal, His eyes were pleading for me to notice nothing amiss, so I smiled and stepped over to shake her hand. I sat down and began a silly conversation. When she'd been at the window and I'd been on the ground outside, she'd been so easy to talk to. Now we were like strangers meeting for the first time. Soon, I made some flimsy excuse about having to hurry home to help Aunt Elsbeth.
"Won't you stay for dinner?"
asked Arden. I flashed him a hurt look of reproach. At least Papa was direct with his hostility and didn't hide it behind the guise of friendship as Billy was doing. Gee, I thought childishly, feeling hot tears stinging the back of my eyes. Our friendship was only for the outside, not indoors. It was just as Vera had told me. I wasn't respectable enough for Billy. Was I so crazy that people didn't want me in their houses? Again, my eyes clashed with Arden's, mine accusing, his still pleading for understanding. Please, please, his eyes were begging. I decided to stay on long enough to find out what was making all of us so self-conscious. There was something burning in the oven. Maybe I was interrupting her cooking and she didn't like it. There wasn't enough for three, and she didn't really want me to stay for dinner. It was such a little house that the kitchen seemed part of the living room. Billy, I think I smell something burning in the oven. May I take it out for you? She blanched, shook her head, gave Arden a furtive signal before she weakly smiled at me.
No, thank you, Adrina. Arden can do all that. But please do stay and have potluck with us.
But the expression of anxiety she couldn't control gave lie to her words. Really distressed and embarrassed now, I bowed my head. Thank you for asking me. But, as you know, my father doesn't like for me to come through the woods and over here. Arden glanced at me, then his mother, and said somberly,
"Mom, this is getting to be a bit much. Can't you tell Adrina?"
She flushed, then paled. I didn't want to know now. All I wanted to do was escape. I stood to go. Suddenly, Billy gushed,
"Oh, why not?"
Flinging wide her slim, strongly muscled arms, she went on,
"Adrina, my dear girl, you are now gazing upon what was once the world's Olympic ice skating champion until I turned professional. That lasted about 18 years. I had a glorious time, loving every moment of the excitement. Arden can tell you tales of how we lived out of trunks. We traveled all over the world entertaining people. And then one fateful day, I fell on the ice because someone had lost a bobby pin. I could have broken my leg, but I only received a cut from my skate. That small cut should have healed in a week or so, but it didn't heal in 6 months because the doctors found out I had diabetes. Would you believe, my leg was rotting right before our eyes, and there didn't seem to be anything the doctors could do to stop it. I hadn't been to a doctor all during my career. I suppose if I had known what kind of vicious disease I had, I might have given up skating much sooner. But as it was, I had my day, didn't I, son?"
"Yes, Mom. You had your day in the sun, and I'm happy you did."
His eyes lit up with pride as he smiled.
"I can close my eyes right now and see you skating, the star of the show. And I felt so proud, so very proud."
He paused and glanced my way again.
"Adrina, what my mother is trying to say and having so much difficulty with is..."
"I don't have any legs, that's what!"
shrieked Billy. I stared at her disbelievingly.
"Yes!"
she cried.
"I was hoping you'd never find out. I wanted us to be friends. I wanted you to treat me like a normal human being and not like a freak."
So stunned by her information, I felt sick. I stared at her face, trying not to look where her legs should be under all those rustling skirts. No legs. How did she get around? I wanted to get out, to run, to cry. For here was another beautiful, kind, and wonderful woman whom God had punished, and somebody else Papa wouldn't approve of. A dreadful silence filled the small room and spread throughout the whole cottage, almost as if time were standing still. We all hung on the brink of some chasm that would swallow Billy and forever separate Arden and me. Whatever I did or said, whatever expression was on my face this very moment, would tell them more than my words. I didn't know what to do or what to say or even what to think. I floundered helplessly, trying to grasp something that would give me the right words. And then I thought of my mother. Suppose, just suppose, that Mama had come home from the hospital with no legs. Would I have felt disgust? Revulsion? Would I have been ashamed and embarrassed to have her seen? No. I'd have wanted her back no matter what. I'd do anything to have Mama back, with or without legs. That's when I found my voice. You're the most beautiful woman with dark hair I've ever seen. I said it sincerely. I'd say you were the most beautiful woman I've ever seen, but my mother was beautiful too. If only I could have my mother again, I wouldn't care if she had legs or not. I paused, flushed, and felt guilty. For Mama would have cared. She wouldn't have been able to cope with her loss. She'd cry, hide herself away, and probably die from the lack of wanting to live without her legs. Admiration washed over me for Billy, who would live for Arden's sake, for her own, too, no matter what the circumstances. I think, too, that you are the kindest, most generous woman I've ever known, I went on. I've piled my problems on your shoulders, and not once have you even hinted you had your own. Humbled and ashamed, again my head inclined. I had felt sorry for myself just because my memory was perforated with holes through which the secrets of my existence had been dropped. Now that she'd told me a little, Billy was going to tell me everything.
My husband left me shortly after I came home from the second amputation 2 years ago.
There was no bitterness in her voice.
My son waits on me. At least, he helps me with what I can't do myself, although I'm pretty good about doing for myself, hey, Arden? Yes, Mom, you're super. There's very little you can't do for yourself.
He smiled at me, so proud of his mother.
Of course, my ex-husband does send his piddling check once a month,
added Billy.
Dad will come back one day, Mom. I know he will. Sure he will. In a year of Sundays, he'll come back.
I jumped up to run and kiss her heavily rouged cheek, then impulsively I hugged her close. Her strong arms closed about me almost automatically, as if she couldn't resist someone who loved and admired her, even though tears were streaming down her cheeks and black mascara ran in streaks. I'm so sorry I burst in on you without warning, I choked, crying too. I'm sorry you lost your legs. But Billy, if you were still skating, and this may sound selfish, I'd never have known you or Arden. Fate brought you both to me. I smiled and brushed away my tears. Papa says that fate is the captain of all our ships, only we don't know it.
That's a fine way to put responsibility where it doesn't belong. Now get along home, Adrina, before your papa comes looking for you, and I'll see you another day, if you want to come back.
Oh, I'll be back soon, I said with confidence. That day, Arden again walked me back through the woods. I was full of admiration for Billy, and wonder, too. I wanted to know just how she managed to clean house and do the laundry when she had no legs. If only I could tell Vera all that Billy could do without legs, when she could hardly do anything with two. I wondered how I'd handle the day when I finally saw Billy without all those stiff, concealing skirts, for surely she couldn't wear so many clothes in the summer. At the edge of the woods, we said a hasty goodbye. Arden still had to deliver newspapers, and then bag groceries. It was likely he would never have enough sleep until he graduated from college. I watched him turn and race back home. He was so conscientious, so dedicated to his mother and helping her financially, that I had less and less time with him. There was a price to pay for everything, I thought sadly, opening the side door and entering our house of shadows. Sprawled on the purple chaise, Vera was busy reading another of the romances that filled Mama's closet shelves. She was so deeply engrossed she didn't pay much attention to me. I wanted to tell her about Billy, but for some reason held back, afraid she'd say something ugly, and it wouldn't make any difference if I told her how hard Billy worked. Vera thought work was for stupid people who didn't know any better. My brains will see me through, she'd told me many times. As I watched her, and she was unaware of me, I saw the tip of her tongue moving back and forth on her lower lip. Her eyes appeared glassy. Her breasts heaved upward, and soon her hand was inside her blouse, caressing herself. Then she put the book aside, threw back her head, and began to use her other hand under her skirts. I stared at what she was doing. Vera! Stop that! It looks gross!
Go away,
she murmured without opening her eyes.
What do you know about anything? You're a babe in the woods. Or are you?
Now that I was growing up, Papa would often take me to his brokerage firm, allowing me to watch and listen to learn all about what he did. I was his showpiece, replacing my mother, who'd often sat in the very chair he gave me beside his desk. Old men and women came to talk to me and to joke with Papa before they turned their conversations to financial talk Papa had taught me to understand.
My daughter is going to be my business partner one day,
Papa proudly informed all newcomers who hadn't heard this 100 times before.
With my kind of daughter, a man doesn't need a son.
He made me feel good on days like this, which ended with dinner in a fine restaurant and a movie afterward. On the city streets, I saw legless beggars on little carts they shoved along, sometimes with gloved hands. They used little things that looked like small rubber-bottomed irons to grab at the sidewalks and spare their hands the blisters. And before, I'd never noticed them. Or if I had, I'd turned my eyes away and pretended they didn't exist. The very next day, I had to say something to Billy that I'd held back since the day I knew about her lack of legs. Billy, I've been looking at people in the city who have no legs, so I won't be shocked if you don't always wear those long skirts. She scowled at me, then turned her head. She had a lovely profile, classical and perfect.
I'll know when you're ready to see me without my full long skirts. I'll tell by your eyes. And you're not ready yet. It's not pretty, Adrina. Those men you see on the streets wear trousers that they fold over so you don't see the stumps. Once, I had very beautiful legs. Now I have 8-inch stumps that even I can't look at without feeling disgust.
She sighed, shrugged, then gave me a charming smile.
Sometimes my missing legs still hurt. Phantom pain, the doctors call it. I wake up in the night and feel my legs below me hurting so badly sometimes I can't help but call Arden, and he comes running to give me some drug the doctor prescribes. He won't let me keep it by my bedside, afraid I'll take too much by accident. It makes my mind fuzzy, so I can't remember if I take 1 or even 2 pills. While I wait for the pill to take effect, he sits by my bedside and tells me silly stories to make me laugh. Sometimes that boy of mine stays up all night just to entertain me when the pains won't go away. God was good to me the day he told me not to destroy the baby that might spoil my career. I thought twice and didn't have an abortion. If I had known long ago all the children I prevented would have been like Arden, perhaps I'd have had 12 children.
Did that mean she'd had many abortions? I didn't like to think she had. I convinced myself she meant she'd done something else to keep from having babies and giving up her career. I also knew even if she'd had 100 sons, only one would be like Arden, devoted, responsible, a man even before he finished being a boy. He was never depressed or angry, just even and steady and always there when he was needed, like Billy. Overwhelmed with my thoughts, I got up to embrace Billy. I never was able to impulsively show affection to my aunt when many times I wanted to. I needed Billy to be my substitute mother, especially when Aunt Elspeth always held me at arm's length. All right, Billy. Maybe I'm not ready yet to see you without your long skirts, but one day when I come over here and you don't have on your dressy clothes, I won't feel disgust. You'll look in my eyes and you'll see nothing but admiration and gratitude for being what you are and giving Arden to the world as well. She laughed and put her strong arms around me before she looked deep into my eyes. There was sadness in her voice when she spoke next.
Don't go falling in love too soon, Adrina. Arden is my son, and I think he's perfect. But all mothers think their sons are perfect. You need someone special. I'd like to think that Arden is that special, for I'd never want him to disappoint you. But if at some point he does, remember that none of us is perfect. We all have our Achilles heels, so to speak.
Then again, with a great deal of perception, she was searching my eyes, and maybe my soul.
What troubles you so much, Adrina? Why all those shadows in such beautiful violet eyes?
I don't know. I held fast to her. I guess I just hate being named after an older sister who died mysteriously at the age of 9. I wish like crazy I'd been the first Adrina, who was also the best Adrina. My papa won't stop telling me how wonderful she was, and every word he says to praise her tells me I'm not living up to the standards she set. I feel cursed, and doubly cursed now that Mama died on my 9th birthday, and Sylvia was born then, too. It's weird and not right for so much to happen when the 9th day of the 9th month comes around. Soothingly, she held me, patiently listening until I finished.
Nonsense. That's all it is. Plain nonsense. You're not haunted and not cursed, though your father should know better than to speak to you so often about a girl in her grave. From all I hear my son say about you, if you were more perfect, you'd have to wear a halo and sprout wings and stand on a pedestal of solid gold. Silly, isn't it? How men want women to look like angels and act like... Well, never mind. You're too young to hear more.
Darn. There she went, stopping just when she was going to say something meaningful. Like Mama, Aunt Elsbeth, and Mercy Marie, too, she grew embarrassed and left me hanging, still waiting for information that would never come. One afternoon, I was in the rocking chair, lazily drifting beyond the boys who waited in the woods to ravish. I knew now that it was Papa's presence, even when he stayed in the hall, that had kept me from finding anything from the rocking chair but the terror in the woods. On my own, alone, I could fill the empty pitcher with contentment and peace, but with Papa anywhere nearby, I had to stand behind the rocking chair and pressure it hard with my hands to make the floorboards squeak. Only when he thought it was working would he leave. This time, I bypassed the school and headed toward somewhere wonderful, when I heard an argument raging down by my aunt's bedroom. Reluctantly, I gave up the vision of the first Adrina and came back to being only me. My aunt was shouting,
"That girl needs to go to school, Damien. If you don't send her to school, someone is going to report you to the school authorities. You've told them you're hiring tutors to see that she's educated, and you're not. And she's not being neglected only educationally. She's abused in other ways, too. You have no right to force her to sit in that rocking chair."
"I have the right to do anything I want with my own child,"
he stormed back.
"I rule this house, not you. Besides, she's not afraid of the rocking chair as she once was. She goes there willingly now. I told you that sooner or later the chair would work its miracle."
"I don't believe you. Even if she does sit there willingly, which I doubt, I want that girl to go to school. Every day I see her watching Vera, standing at the window, wanting what Vera has so badly I could almost cry for her. Hasn't she endured enough, Damien? Let her try again to find her place. Give her another chance, please."
My heart was doing flip-flops. Did my aunt really care about me after all? Or had Lamar Rensdale found a way to convince her that I needed school if I was ever to grow up happy and normal? My papa relented. I would be allowed to go to school. Such a small, normal thing to fill me with such overwhelming joy. When I had the chance, I whispered to my aunt while Vera pored over another romance, "Why, Aunt Elsbeth, I didn't think you cared at all if I was formally educated." She drew me into the kitchen and shut the door as if she, too, didn't want Vera to hear.
"I'm going to be totally honest, Adrina, and truth is something you are not likely to hear in this nut house from anyone but me. That man who teaches you to play the piano came here one day and pressured me into doing something to help you. He threatened to go to the school board and tell them about your situation. Your father would have been fined or even sent to jail for keeping a minor out of school."
I couldn't believe it. Lamar Rensdale had fulfilled his promise, though it had taken him long enough. I laughed and spun around and almost hugged my aunt, but she backed off. I was left to run upstairs, and in the rocking chair I began to sing, hoping to find Mama so I could tell her my good news. Almost a normal life. Papa took me shopping so I'd be ready to attend school at the beginning of the midterm in February. All my Christmas gifts were school clothes, coats, shoes, even that raincoat like Vera's that I'd been wanting for years and years. It was exciting to select skirts and blouses, sweaters and jackets. Papa wouldn't allow me to buy the jeans other girls wore.
"No pants for my daughter,"
he stormed, letting the sales lady overhear.
"They show too much. Now you keep remembering to sit with your legs together and don't even look at the boys. Do you hear me?"
His words were loud enough to inform the whole department store. I turned red and told him to lower his voice. Something ugly always came over Papa when he talked about boys. When February finally rolled around, I was like a small child expecting the circus to keep me forever happy. There was no fear of the woods, for Papa would drive me in the mornings and I'd take the school bus home in the afternoons.
You're going to loathe it,
proclaimed Vera. You think it's going to be fun, that the teachers will care if you learn, but they won't. You'll sit in a class with 30 or 35 others, and soon enough, you'll find it's nothing but boredom. Plain, dull monotony. Without the boys there, I would run away from home and never come back. Not once had she ever said this to me before. When I couldn't go to school, she'd had glowing reports of all her fun activities. Her friends she'd numbered by the hundreds. Now she was telling me she had none.
Nobody likes a white fern, even if they hide behind the name of a dare.
Papa told Vera to keep her big mouth shut. Hurriedly, I said goodnight, racing up the stairs and into the playroom where I could rock and tell Mama about my life. Somewhere up there, I was sure she was listening, happy for me. And as I rocked, again the walls seemed to dissolve and become porous, and the first Adrina was running wild in a field of flowers, laughing as a boy of about 10 chased her. She whirled to confront him when he tugged on her sash and it came off in his hands. Who was he? Why did he stare at the first Adrina like that? The scene faded, and the other Adrina was again in school, with a huge ugly boy with pimples seated behind her, and again, lock by lock, he was dipping her long hair into his India ink bottle. It was during art class, and she didn't even notice.
Adrina,
chanted a frightening sing-song voice that made me bolt back to myself. Vera was in the doorway, glaring at me.
Get out of that chair. You've got enough. You don't need her gift, too. Get out and never sit there again. It's mine. I need her gift most.
I let her have the chair, thinking she was right. I didn't need that unknown gift. It hadn't kept her alive until she was 11, like me. I was surviving, she hadn't, and for now, that gift was enough. Nervously, I dressed for my first day in school the next morning. My skirt was deep periwinkle blue, made of some lightweight wool that would need dry cleaning. My hands trembled when I tied the black ribbon at the throat of my white blouse.
You look beautiful,
said Papa at the door, smiling his approval. Behind him, Vera was standing, envy on her face. Her dark eyes scanned me from head to toe.
Oh, Papa, she said with scorn. Nobody dresses like that anymore. Everybody's going to laugh at overdressed Adrina.
She glanced down at her outfit. Faded blue jeans and a sweater.
I'm the one who's in style.
What she said did little to give me the confidence I needed. I wanted to fit in, not stand out like some oddity. Yet Papa refused to let me wear anything but skirts, blouses, sweaters, or dresses. While Vera boarded the yellow school bus for her high school, Papa drove me to my grade school and came with me to the principal's office. My entry into school had been prearranged, so there was nothing to it, except I had to be shown where to go and told how to behave. The principal seemed to believe I'd been sick a long time. Sympathetically, she smiled.
You'll be just fine once you've learned your way around.
Panic seized me in a tight grip when Papa turned to leave. I felt 6 years old. Then I panicked more, for I didn't remember being 6 years old. Papa threw me a glance over his shoulder.
This is what you wanted, Adrina. What you've begged for. So if you can, enjoy it.
You're a lovely girl,
said the principal, striding off down a long corridor and indicating I was to follow.
Most of the children here are very well disciplined, but a few aren't. Your father says your aunt was a schoolteacher and has kept up your assignments. You should fit right into the 5th or 6th grade with no difficulty. We'll start you in the 5th so you won't feel overwhelmed, and if you do well there, we'll advance you higher.
She gave me another warm smile.
Your father is a very handsome man, and he thinks his daughter is absolutely brilliant. I'm sure he's the one who knows, too.
I looked around at all the children who stared at me. Their clothes were very casual, just as Vera had warned. And yet Vera told me the day before we shopped that the clothes I had on now were right for grade school. I should have known Vera would lie. The girls were all in jeans. None had ribbons in their hair. Furtively, I untied my ribbon and let it fall to the floor.
Hey,
called a boy from behind me.
You dropped your ribbon.
Several students had already dirtied it with their sneakers. Now I didn't know what to do with it but hide it away in my little purse.
"Girls? Boys?"
said the principal, who strode to the front of our classroom.
"I want you all to meet